Welcome to Took Talk, a video podcast by the band Took, and brought to you by Black Frog Media. We chat with the best in the music industry from yesterday and today, with a focus on the good old days of Canadian rock. This episode originally streamed live on Tuesday, August 18, 2020 on Facebook Live. Now, here are your hosts, Todd, Brent, Shane, Corey, and Darren.
Hey, and we're live.
Whoa!
We're live.
Whoa!
Live. Hey, everybody.
Hey, gentlemen.
The Took Talk Tuesday.
Episode 19 18? This week. 19.
Whoa.
Yeah. I believe it's 19.
God. Can you even remember, like, one day we'll just sit down and, like, list the guests. I can't even remember.
Yeah, we'll have to do a best of a DVD compilation at the end. You know?
There you go. Yeah. Because DVDs are selling hot.
Exactly.
Like a K-Tel compilation.
Brent Fitz is back.
Hey, Brent Fitz is here today.
In the house.
Yeah, welcome back. What's going on, Brent?
I was lost.
I'm lost Canada.
It's good, but I'm sad today. We lost somebody. Check it out.
Yeah.
In honor of
Dale Hawerchuk.
Dale passed away today, so.
I can't believe I was so shocked when I saw that.
Well,
so, you know, he's like 57 years old.
Yeah.
Dale Hawerchuk was from the Winnipeg Jets, and he just passed away today from stomach cancer. It's an awful story, but what was his era? When did he play the Jets?
Well, he was, you know, like Rookie of the Year when the Jets were brought into the NHL in the late 70s. The Jets exist, of course, in the early 70s in the WHA, but yeah, he was basically, you know, rookie, star, he was the guy for the Jets, you know.
And, that's so sad. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's awfully young. That's way too young.
He had it twice, too, his stomach cancer. He had beat it, and it came back. And that's unfortunate, is that it didn't stick when he initially was you know, cleared. So, and it's just funny, because off topic, we've all been talking about friends and people with cancer, but you know, I have a family member that's dealing with it, that's doing okay right now, but man, it's crazy that. And Corey, you know, you and I've talked about family and cancer and stuff, but it's just it's not kind. So we just lost another person today, so but we can be positive. I'm happy.
Yeah.
I'm happy to be in Winnipeg still, and miss you guys. I see Darren a little. Darren and I are on the other side of town today, but I was gonna surprise Darren, but I thought I'm going to go back to the Jet logo.
I see that. Lee Renz. Why don't you put out Lee Renz's address like Chris Jericho does every single time? Chris will actually say Lee Renz's address, like that, whatever the number is, he'll say, like, on whatever street. I always laugh. I'm like, people must drive by Lee's house and go, hey, that's what.
Yeah, well, because Chris Jericho grew up down the street from us here, so he was always the dot that connected all of us.
And Lee has had his own house. Lee has had his own house since, what, he was 11 or something? Seems like he's had that house for a long time.
Yeah, the rest of us were all, like, you know, moving and trying to, you know, get our careers going, and Lee had already settled in, but he's doing what he's been doing since high school. He's selling houses today, so, and apparently the housing market is still strong considering all the COVID stuff. But Lee, the other day, goes, I sold three houses this week already.
So there you go, folks. We should all move to Winnipeg. Well, don't
impressive.
Move. If you're going to move right now and then get out of there, like, in about 30 days, because it's about to get gnarly in Winnipeg.
But there's COVID cases here that are rising.
Uh-oh.
So it's a little bit alarming here, guys. So we were cleared for a long time. Hey, Darren. And then, the cases have been escalating a bit. So
this whole thing only started with one case.
Yeah,
so
it's been popping up with big numbers here. I mean,
are we ever
going to
be safe?
13, 14 days of nothing to 30 a day, which is kind of shocking. Yeah. And, you know, and that's school's not even back in yet. So, I mean, we've got to kind of tackle that in a couple of weeks, too. So we'll see how that goes.
Oh boy.
Well, have you been out, Todd? Did you go out?
Yeah, I get out once in a while. I went and had coffee with socially distanced coffee with Frank Sidoris and Craig Gass, comedian friend of ours, and Mikey Ramal.
And is it What's Vegas like? I literally feel like an outsider asking about.
It feels dystopian. You know, it's weird. Like, I've become so, I don't know about you guys, but I've become so accustomed to just seeing people in masks that it's not even weird anymore. You know, it's just kind of like totally normal. What are you going to do? It's been interesting. I was in and out of LA a couple times too, which is even more interesting because the mask thing is even more serious there as far as people wearing it. Masks, you know, on the street. Like, the second you leave the house or get out of the car, you have masks on you.
You guys are really cheering me up.
Russell's in the background.
I'm like, we're what? Okay.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. We should get him on. We got to include.
Yeah. Boyer Vision.
Yeah, exactly.
Darren, you should do the intro. Darren is wearing the appropriate Darren. Shirt and not has been wearing that shirt.
He's been wearing this shirt almost every week for 19 weeks. The giant. When are you going to get Russ Dwarf on here?
Well, I mean, without further ado, we've got one of Canada's best rock vocalists.
And probably Canada's
best. Oh, yeah. Who else can do head spins like that? I mean, if you've never seen it, Google that. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Russ Dwarf of the Killer Dwarfs.
Yay, me!
Yay, you!
Talk to my surgeon.
How's your neck holding up?
I've had to tone my activities down, and I am a senior now, so my new album's coming out, Seniors Discount.
It's from watching a video, and I was like, just checking out like a recent show, and it's you crowd surfing. It's like upside down.
Still
up to these crazy stage antics?
I'm not supposed to be doing that anymore. I've had to tone it down. I had some surgery 2 years ago. Apparently, I had two discs crushing my spinal cord. I have no idea how that happened.
I could probably tell you.
Yeah, but apparently, but they did a really good job. The guy's name was Dr. Harris, so I thought that was a good sign. Steve Harris was a good cat. Yeah. And he was English, but you know, they did a great job, but I've had to cool up. You know, my body's pretty beat up after 40 blah blah years of this comedy.
Yeah.
But you know, I didn't really plan that out. It just comes at me when I hear the racket.
I suppose that's probably the case, right? Like, it's not like some sort of rehearsed or choreographed thing. You just kind of went out there, the music started, and they just did that to you.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, no, I planned everything.
Exactly.
I'm like the Paula Abdul of rock.
So Russ, take us back to the beginning, because we usually like to tell these stories. We have viewers on from all over the world, and, you know, a lot of what this show and this band has been about was exposing Canadian music that people may or may not have heard of, and bands that, you know, people may or may not have heard of. And so take us back to the early days. I mean, Killer Dwarves is obviously, you know, something, but prior to that, you know, taking up in Southern Ontario, what was it like?
Yeah, where did you actually grow up?
I grew up, I was born in Newmarket, just down the street from here. And, but I had restless parents, and we moved to Florida in the 60s.
Oh, really?
I'm like 100 years old. And, so we lived in, Jacksonville, in the 60s and 70s. And my parents were restless, so we came right back around the corner from where we had left when I was about 13. And then, you know, it was the music gag. Like, I guess when I was in Florida, you know, I was a kid, but I got, you know, Alice Cooper was one of my biggest, like, first rock and roller, you know, that I loved and everything, right? To the degree of, you know, you know how it is. You're taken by the bug.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, when I hit Canada, which was weird too, because, you know, I had grown up in the South, and so I had a funny accident.
Wow. Oh,
and,
I bet.
And so grade 8 was a bit weird. And but I met some, actually, oh, this is a wacky story. I had I wasn't in a band or anything, but I love music. You know, I jumped around my living room my whole life, right, to Foghat and shit, Bach and Turner Overdrive and all that. But I had a friend of mine. I was into motorcycles and stuff, and I raced motocross. And when I was a kid, and in this plaza, there was this where this Yamaha dealer was, where I worked there too, and there was this high-end audio place. God, what was the name of it? I'm so old, I can't remember. But they also had it was a group of guys, and they rented PAs, and they also rented or sold high-end hi-fi gear and crap, right? But they had a gospel band too. But these guys are the craziest motherfuckers ever. Like, I was just a kid, right? And I hung around there too, and I would go in the back, and they had this drawer called the Habit Drawer.
So that doesn't sound good.
You could pretty much figure out what happened, but they, you know, they were gospel singers, but they were insane partiers. And one of the guys, he was took me under his wing. His name was Ed Wideman, and he had actually been in Elvis's band in the 70s. Whoa. He was a bass singer in the Stamps.
Oh wow!
Anyways, long story longer. I wasn't in a band or anything. I did try out. I'd never been in a band, and there's always a band in the school, high school or whatever, which I spent actually 10 minutes of my life in high school. I would walk up to the school every day, and my parents worked weird shifts. My dad was a night shift. My mom was a day shift. But I would walk up to the high school, and I would look at the school and go, no. And I would go back home, and I would hide under my bed until my old man went to work, and then I would get up and blast tunes and jump around the living room all day long. So I was preparing to be a singer. But I went to this, there was this band, you know, there's always a school band, right? There's always there's the cool guys, right? And I went looking for a singer. I went to audition for them, and they pretty much laughed me out of the place. It was a crushing blow for a young man. You know, I'm still getting help for that. So that was my first, kick in the pants, which is probably good for you. I remember walking home and remember laying in my bed thinking, I will get you all, right? But then another friend of mine, he was a guitar player. He was from Bombay, India. His name is Sarosh Chesson. And him, we befriended each other, and he was huge into tunes, too. And he was in this weird band, a bunch of older guys than me. I don't know. They were probably 20. And I went to a practice with him, but before I went to the practice, I went and talked to my buddy at that, the gospel guy, and he lent me a mic stand and a mic and a mic cord. And I went down there and just pushed my way into this freaking band. I think we called them the Stink Brothers. There was two twins. I hope they're not alive watching this. I can remember going to rehearsal on a Saturday morning in this van, and the sun coming in and these two stinky guys, and it was just brutal. But anyways, I digress. So, I don't know, and then, eventually you get in the band with your buddies that you... Oh, we're going to make it to the top, and that gag and everything. And that's when I really probably concentrated more on nothing, getting high.
Yeah.
Getting high and rocking out.
Fast forward to the Dwarfs, I guess. So prior to that, correct me if I'm wrong, you guys were a Black Sabbath tribute band. Was that not?
No, that's nonsense.
Fake news? I had just read that somewhere today when we were kind of going through our notes. So take us through how that band came to be then. Yeah.
The Dwarfs, you mean? Yeah. Well, I was in another band, and it was a weird... We did all sorts of stuff, from Pat Benatar to Zeppelin. Obviously, I could sing that high like only dogs can hear me. God, I cringe when I hear that stuff. Anyways, I've matured now. I'm like Tony Bennett now. So I was in this band. It was called Oz, and we did an Alice Cooper show too, of course. So one of the sets was an Alice Cooper show. We were on a tour out east, like, oh my God, you know, touring in those days as kids, right? You know, the cute van, everything stuffed in the bloody thing. Let's go to Newfoundland. This could be fun.
Yeah, right.
And I remember they wanted to kill me there. It was one of those, we did the whole Ballad of Dwight Frye and everything where I had a straight jacket and spit blood. And we were up in some little cove up in Newfoundland. And I'm digressing again. You guys are making me remember this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, the Ballad of Dwight Frye is a big, you know how moody it is and everything. And I'd be in the straight jacket and I'd start spitting blood. The place is like crickets, right? They're all there, but they're like, they wanted to kill me. And I remember the next day I was like in a pharmacy and some two women wanted to, they were ready to kill me. They thought I was Satan or something, right? Anyways, on this tour, I don't know if you guys know because you're so young, a place in Quebec City called Electric Circle Electric. You ever heard of that place?
I remember the name. Yeah, that's before my time.
It was a gig. It was a great gig, actually. It was in the old part of Quebec City. It was like an old theater, and this old school teacher was like the liaison. I don't know who ran the place. Probably some giant drug dealers, but this old lady would be running it. She'd come with peanuts and an envelope and everything, and you do like five sets a night, you know. To it was Quebec in those days, it was like crazy, right?
Yeah.
And so anyways, a long story longer, they, you know, you had the band house or whatever, so the band that was coming in after us, they came in a day early and they had no place to stay, so it was Dunk's band, Daryl, right?
Okay.
You know, Fritz knows Duncan. We've known each other a long time.
Yeah.
And
Daryl went on to become Daryl Dwarf, essentially.
Daryl Dwarf, yes, correct. Yeah. This is pre-Daryl Dwarf and pre-Russ. So they came in a night early, and we said, oh, just hang with us. So, of course, we partied like maniacs and everything. And Duncan and I got talking, and we weren't happy with either band. So we said, okay, you take Bryce, the guitar player, and I'll take Ange, the bass player, and we'll make a band. And it was funny because I think we stayed one extra night to watch them, and they were a three-piece band, and Dunk was behind the kit. He was like the lead singer, right? And I remember walking up to the stage with him, or it might have been when we were going on, I can't remember, I'm so fucking old. Anyways, I remember Dunk going to me, I always wanted to be a lead singer. And he went up on stage and he grabbed the mic like he was the front guy and everything. But, you know, from there we you know, finished what we were doing with those two bands. His band was Sphinx from Oshawa.
Okay.
And so it was around November 81. We rehearsed in the basement apartment he lived in with his girlfriend. Oh, my God, that must have been insane for the people. And we had our first gig on New Year's Eve 1981 at the Janosch Hotel in the Ontario. And that was another famous shithole establishment.
Now, was that called Killer Dwarfs? Did you guys go through gigs?
At that point, we... that's a whole other story. At that point, we were going by Dunk's band's name, Sphinx, at that gig. But you could basically say that's when we officially started. And then we, we were trying to get gigs, right? Like Dunk and I, Dunk's dad was a real estate agent, and he let us use some building that wasn't for sale. Maybe your buddy could sell that building.
There you go. Dunk's a lead rent.
And I remember him coming in there and kicking us. Okay, that's enough. Get the fuck out of here. I remember being Dunk in the winter on Highway 2 in a phone booth. Remember those kids, phone booths?
Yeah, of course.
You know, trying to call agents to get gigs, right? We couldn't get arrested. And there was an agency. I'm not going to start mentioning names here, but I remember we went down to this agent. And it was like gigs Toronto and everything, and he goes, we want to play the Gasworks, man. You know, that's the big gig, right? Playing out where the trees stop growing. And he said he's like Truman Capote. He had his feet up on the desk and he said, "You guys are too ugly. You'll never play. You'll never play Toronto. You're not good looking like Sanders." Wow. So anyways, I said something. I'm not going to say what I said. And Dunk said, "No, he didn't say that. And he didn't mean it like that." I said, "Yeah, I fucking did mean it like that." Anyways, so we didn't get that gig. We tried, and, you know, like everybody else, playing and playing and playing. We, you know, in those days, we played probably 200-300 shows a year, right?
Yeah.
Of course, you're with your $11.95 a week and your freaking electric frying pan.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That loaf of bread.
So, I mean, and let's talk the obvious. Speaking of the name, I mean, I could only make the assumption Killer Dwarfs. Is that kind of paying, you know, playing off the Leafs? Or was that just something that just kind of stuck?
No, it was a manager we had at the time. So we got a manager, Bob Connolly, from Toronto. And he had, Lee Aaron was on that with him. And I think Sanders was with him too. I can't recall. And Dave Kirby. You know Dave Kirby.
I know Dave Kirby well, yeah.
Yeah. Dave and
passed Bob, on.
Yeah, and he was we have a great history with Dave, and he him and Connolly, first they wanted to get rid of me and get they wanted the guys to be Lee's band, Lee's a backup band.
Oh, Lee Aaron's backing band, really?
Yeah, that's what they wanted, and they wanted me to do a Journey tribute. So,
okay. I can't picture that.
Well, I would have been perfect for that at that age, for sure.
Well, yeah.
Anyways, yeah, Satan's Cabana Boy. So, so basically, they were trying to think up a name for us because they didn't like that name. And they can't, and we went to the office and they said, "Oh, we got this name, Killer Dwarfs." And we were like, "What the fuck?" You know? And then we did promo and stuff. The promo, if you guys could see, I should have brought some stuff up, but totally politically incorrect of today's standards. Everybody's offended. Anyways, it kind of stuck, and it stuck. And 40 years later, here we are. But it was now it just seems normal. But when people ask me, I would still be like, "What's the name of your band?" Killer Dwarfs. I still say it at this age. my doctor, "Why are you in such rough shape?" "Well, what do you do for a living?"
Yeah.
"I'm a killer dwarf." Well, it's funny because where we grew up, at least from like the distance in the prairies from where the Killer Dwarfs came from, by the time you guys sort of made your way out our way, the legend had loomed. You know, even the logo. I'm looking at Darren's shirt, and I'd be like, I remember being fascinated by like some of the letters are capitalized, and some of them are like are lowercase letters. And it was kind of like they're called the Killer Dwarfs. They're like 4 feet tall. Of course, no one knows that this is true. And the singer's doing somersaults and standing on his head and riding a tricycle on stage. And we're like, what? So by the time you guys came, it was kind of like, I don't think anybody had ever seen anything like it. And I was telling these guys earlier how, like, after you guys came across once, it seemed like every band, the singers were all trying to be Rusty Wharf. And I'm sure a lot of those guys are in way worse shape than you are because of it.
Really? I never knew that. I think we came, were you in Winnipeg at the time? Did you ever see us in the early days back
then? I was in Saskatchewan. Fitz was in Winnipeg, yeah.
I saw you, Russ. I snuck into the zoo.
The zoo?
Village.
Yeah.
So maybe on first album? So would that be like 86 or something?
That's 84, 83 was the first album, and I think the first spring or the winter of 84, and the zoo, that was insanity in there in those days. That was just outrageous.
Oh, I didn't get in. That's the thing. It was so sold out, and I was so underage. And I was already playing clubs, but they were real sticklers for ID, even though we didn't have picture ID. They wouldn't fucking let me in. I was so fucking bummed. But the people were like in the parking lot. Like, it was so packed back in those days.
Yeah, I remember those shows were off the freaking hook, and we used to destroy that place. Yeah. Just absolutely, it was absolutely crazy. And that was historic, that place, for sure.
You know, so no longer there.
No longer there, yeah. I saw that, yeah.
I saw you guys at the Windsor.
At the Windsor.
84 or 85, the Windsor Red Deer?
Oh, Dead Rear, yeah. And those were crazy. Those were crazy things, too.
Yeah.
I think we were, like, traveling on a Greyhound bus, for God's sakes. Like, I think the crew went in a truck, and we had to get bus tickets. Oh, my God.
I remember that place just being told. I actually talked to you after the gig, too. I went up and said, oh, man, Russ, how you doing? I'm not sure how I got it. I guess I was 18, but so maybe it was 85, 84.
Yeah, that would be around that time.
It was the first record, though.
That's crazy.
You guys remember that you guys were featured on a Metal for Breakfast album, which somehow everybody had.
Yeah. That was on Attic as well. On Attic.
That was Attic because that was our first. That was our first deal, right?
Which song was on Metal for Breakfast?
Heavy Metal. That's crazy you guys saw those gigs. That's crazy.
So what? And then, yeah, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, well, for the then eventually you guys were everywhere on our TVs because the videos were epic. I mean, they are to this day. They're, well, you look back and you go, those were fucking incredible. Cause
who came up with, the concept?
Clever.
For Stand Tall. Like Stand Tall and Alone, because it really created this image of, like, you know, you guys can't be controlled and you're going to do it yourself. And that whole vibe was just hilarious, the way to kind of making your own record.
Those were homemade. It was actually, it's another weird story. It was my little brother's best friend's brother was worked as an editor on Lauren Green's New Wilderness.
Oh yeah,
that's the Canadian story ever,
right? And I actually knew him. He lived around the corner from us and everything. But he was a team of young guys too. That they've all become really well known in their field, and especially special effects. The special effects guys were great, and so like the Keep Spirit Alive took like 6 months because, you know, we had no money, so we just do it in spits and spurts and everything. And the same with Tall. I think Tall was like, I think the budget was like $14,000. It was like, oh my God, it's like Cher or something. those videos, and you know, it was the right time, like that, you know, 83 or whatever, Much Music, or I think it was before Much Music, Toronto Rocks. I don't know if that came across this country, but that the other CBC one, what the hell was that called? CBC Rock Show.
Terry David Mulligan,
and then
Good Rockin' Tonight,
and the
video hits
John Stewart.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But Toronto Rocks. I forget his name. He was a great guy too. He died of cancer too.
Speaking Toronto of the Rocks
cancer thing, it's terrible.
Yeah.
Toronto Rocks. But
that, wait, was that, you know, that Dan Gallagher?
That was,
is that
super? It helped. Dan Gallagher was Much Music.
Yeah, because he passed away too, right?
He passed away too. He had a heart attack quite a few years ago, about 20 years ago, I think. He was great. He was a good, good pal of ours. But much Music hadn't started yet. I think it was New Music, because we did the first interview we did with New Music was down on Queen Street East. Dunk actually lives right there right now. But
Andy Roberts.
Andy Roberts was, he did our first interview. And, you know, now he's the big wig on Fox.
John Roberts.
Yeah. John Roberts, yes. So, but those videos really, you know, and in those days, right, there's no internet, so it's like, this is the best way, advertising you could possibly get. You know, but prior to that, you know, in the 70s and the 60s, record companies did those videos, but no one ever saw it. It was just for Vogue's and stuff, right?
Right.
Promo crap.
Mm-hmm.
But it did such a great job for us, especially when MTV started, because they had the Headbangers Ball, and we were still independent, right? Because Stan Paul, we had lost our record deal with that, so we had another kind of like licensing deal. That's a whole other story. Anyways, when MTV played those, they were the two most requested independent videos of all time.
At the time.
And that got, you know, so you can see us in Peoria, you know.
Yeah.
So when we came to those towns, that was a great thing. They already, you know, you didn't have to, like, whatever kids do today, I don't know what they do.
Well, yeah, I guess that was the whole purpose of Much Music and MTV, was so that by the time you got to that town, they had seen you, they had heard you. It's the same as getting played on the radio, I guess.
Yeah, which, you know, we never did.
Well, yeah.
I think you guys had a good exposure touring with Maiden around that time,
yeah.
I would say, right?
That was 88. That was after we got the Epic deal, so we had done... So we did, you know, the first album, we did Tall, which that helped us get the, you know, that helped us get the deal, the U.S. deal with Epic out of New York. But the name was 88. That was the big deal, album. Yeah.
And that made you too. Is that when you guys were living in the States? Did you guys relocate to Los Angeles at some point?
We were there a lot after Weapons. It started there at Weapons.
Okay.
Because Andy Johns did, you know, a couple of the albums. We did, you know, Simon Hanhart did Big Deal. So we did that album and toured that record. And then when we did Weapons... we wanted to get a different producer. We love Simon and everything, but I wanted to get Rick Derringer.
Oh, wow.
But we ended up getting... I love Rick Derringer. He's one of my all-time favorites from when I was a kid.
Totally.
That's a lot of jumping around the living room with that guy.
Hang on, Sloopy.
Yeah, hang on, Sloopy. And, senior moment. Okay.
Andy Johns.
So we, you know, this is you know, before the internet, so you can't really research this stuff, and you don't understand. You know, like, I'm sure all you guys are fanatical about, you know, credits on records and, you know, that kind of gag. Who did this and blah blah blah. So we liked the drum sound on the Cinderella album. Night Songs, or
yeah.
I can't remember what album it was, but we really liked the drum sounds on that record. So you know, we tried to contact him. You know, we had the Epic deal, and Epic was totally against it. They were like, because, you know, he had a wicked reputation of being insane.
He liked to have a drink or two, that's for sure.
He liked to have a lot of things.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the story with Andy, I've got to tell you, like, I love Andy so much. Him and I became such great friends. We talked every single week from the 90s on up to when he passed. Him and I were great pals. And... he's one of a kind. But here's the deal with him. So Epic's like, no, because he had done all the stuff with Eddie Money and gotten a lot of shit. They caused a lot of trouble. And he's just a maniac, right? But he wasn't the kind of guy that conformed to the business. Like, his brother, Glenn, I don't know if you know him. He's like the elder statesman of... He has done everything. Like, read his book, you'll blow your fucking mind. And he's the English statesman kind of guy, and Andy's just like a fucking maniac, right? Like, Andy was in the studio, you know, when his brother was doing Hendrix when he was 14, and the Stones and everything. He was like the T-boy at Olympic and stuff like this, right? So he comes by it, you know. Like, if you look those two up, in the top, you know, they've done like 14% of the freaking top 200 records of all time.
Well, we have to mention that the Led Zeppelin records speak volumes right there.
Totally.
Andy Johns.
Absolutely. And the Stones, and, you know, it goes on. It's this, you know, I'm fanboy at this point because it's like, you know, that's the music, the 70s that I love and everything, right? But anyway, blah, blah, blah. I'm rambling on as usual. But I'll tell you the story of Andy when he, so Epic said, no, no, no. We said, yes, yes, yes. So we tried to get him up. We were in pre-production for Weapons, right? So we didn't have any gigs scheduled. And we booked him a flight to come up. And he missed it. And we booked him another one. Cause, so we had to book gigs for him. You know, okay, we're going to book this gig. Andy can come see us. We do this like four times. He misses it four fucking times, right? So finally, we get him to a freaking gig in Kitchener or something. I can't remember what it was. And he comes in, and he's the big fella. He is like 6 foot, six, five, six, right? And 200 pounds. He's a giant man. And he's got like a purple or Dodgers jacket on or blue Dodgers jacket, giant, you know, cowboy hat, and giant colored glasses, and he's like, I want to put B3 on your album. I'm like, fuck you. You haven't even heard the band yet, right? I can't tell some of these stories. I feel like
that's the idea. That's the idea. Basically, that's what we're doing.
We are just talking, yeah.
But anyway, so he sees the band and everything and that night, and I'm walking out of the gig with him, and he goes to me, I hate your fucking band.
What?
I hate your fucking band, but you're really funny. Let's do it.
Wow.
So that's how that started.
Wow.
So where was that recorded? In Los Angeles?
That was in LA. We did that at
Sunset, and we did it
at a private studio called what was it called? I'm senior moment. I just want to see what's my dog doing back there. Anyways, it was a private studio in Toluca Lake owned by Hank Zanicoli Jr. His dad was Hank Zanicoli Sr., who managed Frank Sinatra.
Oh, wow.
And it was a cool place, and it was bizarre because it's a beautiful neighborhood. It backed up onto Bob Hope's estate, actually. And one of the neighbors was Jonathan Winters.
Oh, wow.
So I'd be driving in there, and I would see him, and he would see me, and I could see him looking at me like, fuck you, get out of my car. But after 6 months, he kept seeing me at the gas station, and he like waved to me and stuff, and I was like, wow, that was wicked.
So, Russ, going back and forth a little bit here, just quickly, just to tie in, somebody just was asking a question online, and I know we touched on it a few minutes ago, and I just didn't want to interrupt the story, but was there a particular song or a band that made you decide that you wanted to get into music in general? Like, was there, you know, where was that turning point in your life where you went from just, you know, this is what I'm going to do?
Alice, I guess.
Oh, Rick Derringer.
Rick Derringer. It was Cooper, probably, for the front man stuff or just the lead singer thing, and Bowie and Derringer for sure. Those were my, you know, when I was like 13, those were like a big deal to me. You know what I mean? Dunk and I, we love the Coop so much, right? You know, you can't beat those early records. You're just off the hook.
Totally.
So they have everything.
Was it an official thing to eventually name everybody Dwarf like the Ramones, or did that just kind of happen, or how did that, I mean, was this something you guys kind of came up with, or did it just kind of like, yeah, we'll just...
It was like a joke that went awry. You
know? As they often do.
Because I can, you know, we would be like in a record store, and we'd see people looking at the album and saying, they're all brothers, man.
Yeah.
I know they're all brothers, right? It's like the name Killer Dwarfs. It's like a state of mind. It's like Texas. Dunk is like 6'3".
I know. Yeah, it never made much sense because, like I said, what I remember hearing you guys were like tiny people, and just, no, they're just kind of. But it's the beauty of that thing with all that same last name, the crazy logo, and everything. Just the, this image just loomed long. I think that's all really, it's important. And the video is just, the video is just doubled up that whole image of like, these guys are, you're in a box. They keep you in a box apparently between gigs, from according to the video. So
yeah,
I think all this stuff started to become just reality. Does
we love the comedy, Dunk and I? Like you, yeah. You know, in those days, you gotta laugh or you're gonna cry, and we were just too pig-headed to stop. We loved it so much. It doesn't matter what shit you're gonna go through, you just love it. It's like,
yeah,
you're living your dreams, you know what I mean? It's amazing. It's absolutely incredible.
It's like those guys that supposedly laughed you out of the rehearsal that time you were auditioning. Those guys all tell stories of how Russ Dwarf,
yeah, exactly,
came to our rehearsal once. And,
that little bastard.
Yeah, you know, Russ, I'm curious, not to go back, but on the first record, you know, recording at Phase One, I'm kind of like a studio geek.
Cool.
But how did you guys scrounge up the cash to go do that first record? Like, was there a budget from the label at that point, or you guys?
Yeah, it was a record deal. Uh-huh. We originally went in. That's a whole other. It's a good story, but we got the deal with that Addict, and we went in and did some demos. Actually, Anvil was doing Metal on Metal with Chris Sangarini's in there, and I've been friends with those guys since, you know, Christ was a cowboy. But we did some demos because we didn't have, we were writing, but these were older tunes from Dunk's band, and I think they're actually on a reissue of the first album or something. I don't have it, but that's what I've seen. Anyways, so we did a demo with Chris there for Addict, and it would have been great to have done the record, but that didn't work out. And the owner of Phase One, Doug Hill, mm-hmm, producing it, he was involved in the.
That's right.
And Robin's Triumph records were made there as well, right?
They were the same place. Yeah, and we did big deal. We did big deal there too. I don't think it's. I think they've rearranged it. I don't think it's the same place as it was. That's what I've heard. I don't know if it's just mixing rooms, or I don't really know what's going on. I don't know what happened to that board and everything. But yeah, that was a great place.
Yeah,
awesome place.
Brent, maybe did you record there ever?
At where?
Phase One, Toronto.
No, I wish. No, I've never done any good.
Been there.
I worked at Metalworks. Worked
in Toronto.
Metalworks had mixed a record at Metalworks, which was owned by Gilmore, I guess.
Yeah, Gilmore, and he was good friends with Doug Hill, the owner of Phase One, and apparently it's the same setup. It was.
I see.
Okay.
That's what I heard. I have never been to Metalworks.
Yeah.
Yeah. The productions are similar, like that first Dwarves record and like Allied Forces or something. It's like,
yeah,
the sound is very similar.
Yeah, that was a great room. That old Neve. The old Neve. The old timey Neve and the old 2-4 scooter there by. Get the right razor blades out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Those days are long gone.
Yeah, man, cutting and doing.
Yeah, cutting and doing. So So did you actually live in Los Angeles, or you were just working and recording in Los Angeles? Did you actually relocate?
I didn't. Dunk eventually did, and I think Cod did too, but we were there so much.
Right.
Like, Weapons took 6 months.
Did you just stay up in Toluca Lake in that area, or where were you?
We were up at the Jokewood apartments. Okay.
Sure,
and,
yeah.
and I stayed at Andy's a lot.
Andy live?
He lived up in the hills on Mulholland.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, Russ, I did work at Cherokee on a record with Andy.
You did?
And he actually, we talked more about your guys' record and you guys more than any band. You know,
are you
could
serious?
Have briefed him on like, hey, let's go through, you know, tell me about all the, you know, the Led Zeppelin records and how you recorded the drums. But he was really proud of, and we talked a lot about the drum sound on Dirty Weapons and whatnot. That was more
that's
of our
awesome.
Conversations, was about the Killer Dwarf sounds. And that
awesome.
Really happened. And that was at Cherokee, and
That's that was totally like cool. I love
around
that.
2000.
I love that. That's awesome. Yeah. He was a great cat, man. I really, him and I hit it off, you know, really well. And, you know, it was beyond the music and everything. Like, we would go on road trips together. We'll have we'll have to do another show about that.
Yeah. Was it like Hunter S. Thompson kind of?
Yeah. He's a character, man. But, you know, when it came to him doing his gig, fuck it. Right? You know, you've seen it, Brent, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he could do his, he knew what he was doing. I don't know what
he was very into it. Like, when it was on, it was serious and it was very inspiring. And, of course, as the day went on and there was a few, you know, pops had a few too many pops, then it was probably like, okay, we'll probably take a break now, but
fuck off Brazil.
But I was very inspired, yeah. And he did have, there was something about his miking techniques, and you know, clearly he had done so many great records, and like Dirty Weapons is a great sounding album because you know he contributed to that sound for you guys. So
He inspired us. You know, at that point, we obviously had our shit together to the point where we, you know, and we always did a lot of pre-production and made sure we had it together. So once we saw him, we'd do like 14 days of just going over what tempos and endings and blah, 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 maybe little things. And then he, on Weapons, actually, after I think the first day, he said, oh, we need one more tune, or go write a ballad. And we went back and wrote Doesn't Matter in about 20 minutes.
That's great.
Wow. So,
which was a big hit. Eric and I were talking just before the show that we were trying to remember what, because I like that song a lot, yeah.
Yeah, that's probably our biggest tune for sure. But he was he would inspire you, you know what I mean? He was really good with everybody. I don't know, I could say so many things about him. You know what I mean? I think it's an education money can't buy, but you sure do pay for.
Yeah. You really don't get characters like that anymore, do you?
No.
I mean,
no.
It's not really. Guys like him are so talented that he can kind of get away with a lot of those years. But I think it's a different business these days as far as, you know, those kind of characters kind of get squeezed out somehow, I guess.
Yeah, well, does that even happen? You know, you go in and work on an album for that long in the studio, and who's got that kind of budget? And you know, or people are doing it in their basements. They went to Long McQuaid and went to Long McQuaid and bought a studio and went to their basement. I made it at home. That's why it sounds so shit.
Yeah, it's a different time entirely now, but yeah, I think that it's amazing that you have that connection to all those Led Zeppelin and Rolling Stones records. I mean, that's firsthand for you.
He would never talk. He didn't talk much about it. You know, he did tell me a few things if he got going and everything, and I'd hear the same story 500 times. But, the guy, he was great at what he did. That was is that kind of thing gone?
Well, I think that, you know, there's obviously guys who are good at, helping sounds and songs together. Yeah, who's dog?
I don't know. I heard one on your end.
There he is. It's Darren's.
That's my dog. That's my dog responding to your dog. Yeah.
They're having their own.
It's not your show.
They're having their own interviews.
Yeah. But, yeah, I love the Johns. Well, I could talk about him. We could do a whole nother show on that.
That's amazing.
Awesomeness. And it's great, Brett. You got to work with him. That's awesome.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
You know what? Yes.
I was going to say, just because your background looks a little cooler than ours, like, are you in your backyard? Are you a house guy? Are you
outside
a house. Of town? Where do you live?
We're in Aurelia.
Just
a little, Casino Rama's like five minutes from here. Yeah, we live in an old part of town. This house was built in 1904. We've been here since 2013. I love it. My wife wants to move.
Oh, yeah?
Wants to move. Where does she want to go?
I don't know. Not here.
Back to songs in general, and we always, you know, have this kind of back and forth. I know 2013 you did a acoustic album, Wireless. If anybody hasn't checked that out, go do so. It's fantastic. Yeah. Somewhere in that process, you had to select, obviously, from your whole catalog, a number of songs to do. any favorite standouts over time? And if so, I'm trying to encourage these guys to do a Killer Dwarf song. If you had one in particular, what would be that song?
There you go.
That's a good question.
I need some helium to get up to those fucking notes.
I'll fix you up. Yeah, that record, it's just like some of the ones I really like, and the players that I had on there, Glenn Belcher is an amazing artist, and the producer Fred Duvall, who's been with me at least 30 some odd years, but those guys were, you know, and my manager, he was involved in it too. He played on it, Rob Zacks. They really, I was probably against it. I didn't want to do it. And they kind of forced me to do it. There was a lot of shit going on in my life at that point. But I'm super happy with it. It turned out really well, thanks to those guys and their efforts. Like, I just sang the damn thing. But they really, you know, they deserve a lot of credit for that. But as far as you guys doing a song, I'd have to look to the thing. Something off Madness, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. Yeah.
Yeah. Let me think about that.
What's on the vast catalog?
Yeah. You know, Darren already has a song in mind.
Well, I've always thought that you guys would do a great version of Dirty Weapons myself, but I mean, you know.
Yeah, that is a good one.
Weapons.
You have
to do two then.
Yeah, do a Hard Luck Town. I like that one too. That would be a good one. Yeah. Like, you know. But yeah, there's tons to choose from. It would really come down to we always like to think what your suggestion would be.
Yeah,
it's a twofer.
I'm gonna look it up because I think a deeper track. There's a lot of great tunes on Madness.
Outside of Killer Dwarfs, we do a lot of Canadian covers. As I think, I'm not sure how aware you are, but we did like. We've done two records of cover songs by April Wine and Rush and blah, blah, blah. Is there anybody, you know, anybody else? Just, you know, when you were growing up, it was Rick Derringer and Alice Cooper. Was there a Canadian band or a Canadian artist?
Well, obviously Rush, or I would lose my passport.
you got to change your hat too. Then
April Wine.
Yeah.
Pardon me. Anyways, dude, I was Canadian, eh? Hey.
Well, you actually lived in Jacksonville, so you got all that.
I lived in Jacksonville. Yeah. I love Americans and I love the States.
Yeah.
April Wine, huge fan of the Wine. Hit after hit after hit.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. I would love to cover one.
They're still going, too. We did a festival last year or a year before, and April Wine was on the bill.
Yeah. I saw them a couple of years ago. Somebody got me tickets, and it was at a little theater out in Mississauga or something, and they got me, like, front row, dead center in front of Miles. And no! It was like, you know, it's like... soccer bomb place or something. Library, right? Like, it was all peaceful and quiet. It wasn't like a rock show. Well, it was a rock show, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
The libraries. And I felt like, oh my God, I got to get up and take a piss. Everybody in the place. And I thought Miles kept giving me the stink eye. I was like, oh my God, of course, you know, they love this guy. That's right. And then after the show, the road manager came over and said, hey, Miles wants to say hi to you. And I was like, what? So I went back and we had a little chat, but I totally love that guy. I totally love April Wine.
Talented cat. Yeah, they've done a lot of great songs. Yeah.
Holy solid king.
What was that like back when you guys were doing your thing? Because we've talked to so many guys, you know, we talked to a lot of prairie guys over the years, like Harlequin, Street Heart, all those bands sort of like floated in and out of each other's kind of like orbit a little bit, you know what I mean? But Dwarfs being on your guys' who are you rubbing shoulders with?
Like
Santers.
Santers, exactly.
I play with Santers and Anvil and stuff like that, but
sure, yeah.
You know, I think we're on the road playing those hotel hotels and stuff for like six nights in a row. You're only seeing people when you're coming in and coming out. Coney Hatch. Yeah. Sure. You know, we all know. Everybody knows each other from that elk. You know, from the Toronto elk.
That's the thing. There's a lot of bands that came out of that hang out there. Brighton Rock.
Great friends too. Jerry McGee and the boys, all great guys. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
What was it like doing the Headbangers Ball with Rob Halford?
Gatto.
Gatto's the big one every time you talk to Toronto guys. They're always Gatto.
They kick the shit out of the bars. It was incredible. Like, if you saw them, it's like, when you said you went and saw the Dwarfs at the Zoo, this was like me sneaking in at 16 years old to the Queensberry Arms, and getting kicked out of there, too. But they blew the fucking doors off the place.
Yeah, I can only imagine.
Gino's a super close friend of mine.
That's awesome.
He played on one of my solo albums. I have another solo album with my partner Dave Rayom called Penny Black. It came out in 2001 for about 10 minutes. I think it went paper. it just got reissued. We just reissued it, and it's the first freaking album I've ever been in the black on. Gino plays on that record.
That's awesome.
You can look it up in the Where Are They Now bin. Where are you? I don't trust him. He's probably getting a skunk.
That would make for great. That'd make for a great podcast.
Oh yeah.
I wanted to ask about when you were on with Rob Halford on the. Did you guys ever tour with Priest, or was that just kind of a total?
Yeah, we never toured with Priest. It was just one of those setups. We were hosting Headbangers Ball.
That's what it was. You were hosting.
Didn't I tell you this story the other day on the Long Island story and everything?
No.
Oh my God. we were on that. It must have been Big Deal. Anyways, we had this bus, and it was like a 66 MCI. It was like the cottage from hell, we called it. It was like, you woke up in Arizona and the air conditioning broke. And everybody. But anyways, so we were in Long Island or something, and we had to go in to do MTV, and we tried to get a day room, and of course we didn't have any money. So our road manager at the time had a brilliant idea. Let's go to the YMCA in Manhattan. Here's your towel, sir. Here's your 75 cents. That was a fucking scene. I'm not going to tell you what happened in there, but Jesus Christ. Show business is so glamorous.
Yeah.
So anyways, we ended up doing MTV, and Rob was the greatest cat. God, he's a freaking god. He's a metal god. He's
metal god.
Rob fucking Holford, right? So, and he was so cordial and sweet, sweetest guy in they shrunk him down on her shoulder and called him Rob Pixie Dwarf. He came to the show that night, actually.
Amazing.
That's
great. Yeah, I bet.
So what's the future look like for the band once all of this COVID is be hopefully behind us?
A band.
Yeah.
This band. We've got a few things coming up. Apparently, we were supposed to be in Belgium right now.
Wow,
that ain't happening. Apparently, I think. I don't know. I haven't seen the guys in 6 months. It would be nice to see everybody. It's been great. Peaceful.
Yeah.
Bastards. We've got M3 is rescheduled again for May, and some other stuff probably.
You guys always have done the monster cruises. Todd and I are experts on the cruise because we go to the Kiss cruise every year. But those are actually great.
Yeah.
Right? The cruise is amazing. Probably, we don't know how they're going to fare in the future, but they were great.
Yeah, we've been on about 7 of the Monsters of Rock cruises. They're having it on land this in May. They're doing it to Canada. So and guess who's headlining it?
Ooh,
the only rock star that I've never met.
Oh.
Alice fucking Cooper.
Oh, wow, cool.
Amazing.
Yeah, amazing. So that's in May, and I don't know, man. Like, are the casinos open out west yet?
Sort of. Yeah, there's some casinos over here, but I think it's all very strange and masks.
What about Winnipeg?
I think to a limited capacity. Some of them are open, but I mean, they obviously.
Like, they're not having shows.
Some of the clubs are, though. There are club shows. Yeah.
There is some live shows.
I don't know how they're doing that, but.
Oh, really?
Live shows are happening.
Yeah.
Live shows in Winnipeg are happening, yes.
Okay, wow.
Well, I don't know.
Like, yeah, most of the bands don't notice the difference in terms of attendance, though, so it's okay, you know?
I don't want to sing in front of a salad guard.
No, I know.
It's not happening, and I don't want to sing in a drive-in, for God's sake.
Those are so weird, right? I can't imagine.
Unless I get free drink rolls.
There you go. People were saying, like, it's like, if they like to, they honk their horn and stuff.
I think they kind of sit on top of their, on the hood of their car or something like that. And I'm like, it's very strange, the whole thing.
Everybody could keep the motors running. That'd be good.
There you go. Everybody.
Well, hey, there's a lot of guys. This whole past week and last week, Dad had been playing Sturgis.
Yeah, I saw that.
Including some Canadian band over the border played and went back. So, you know, there were gigs happening.
What Canadian band?
The Guess Who? Yeah. So, but I mean, LA guys, nothing going on there, right?
I think, who knows? I guess we're screwed until who knows when. But I miss playing. But then I know when I get out there, I'm going to be going, fuck this. I'm going to go home. You know the drill.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? I want my own bed.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
So, Russ, who's your team in the playoffs? Is your team in there, or who are you cheering for?
Biden or Trump? What do you mean? Hockey? Honestly, I'm not a sports guy whatsoever, but...
Okay.
Go Sabres.
Okay.
Oh, interesting.
You know, they're not in it, but they did a lot better this year.
I'll see you though. But at least they're consistent.
Yeah. It's like loving the Jets. It's so hard to be a Jets fan. But,
is it? I like your logo.
Yeah.
It's good, huh?
Yeah. And I like that new logo, the plane. That's cool.
It does look awesome.
Yeah. I come from I had a lot of sports in my family. My dad was like a referee chief. He was Mr. Hockey and golf and every sport on demand kind of thing. I got it driven out of me. I played hockey for years and everything too. My claim to fame with hockey is I did a Post Alphabets commercial with Bobby Orr when I was 11.
What?
There you go. Top that, fucker.
That's untoppable. That is the Wayne Gretzky of the 70s.
Well, what can I say, man? I never ate cereal after that, I'll tell you that.
Oh, I bet. Yeah, yeah. That was enough alphabets for you.
Jesus.
Man, alphabets were delicious.
I know, but not when, you know, you got to eat it. You're like hours on end, and the lights have made the milk sour, and it's like,
yeah. Do they still make alphabets? Does anybody know?
I don't know, but Captain Crunch is still out there.
Tearing the roof off of mouths for generations.
The alphabet's mascot was the Wizard of Words.
Well, that's dead.
That's dead, exactly. No one wants to learn.
The Wizard of Euphemisms.
Is alphabets a Canadian thing? Because I don't think I've ever seen it down here.
Really?
Like there were bits, so there were like letters. It was basically like alphabet soup or something like that.
You guys probably didn't get it. It's in kilometers.
Well played. Yeah, I'm kind of the same way with sports. I think I played it so much as a kid, and I was raised in such a heavy sports kind of thing that when music found me, I just checked out entirely. I still love it, and I check in when I can, but it's not. I'm not real super passionate about it. But it's been interesting living in the States, because watching the Golden Knights happen here in Vegas really reignited a lot of that passion, because watching an entire city just become infected with this sort of fever that you kind of forgot existed, because I've in the States.
Infected, yeah. Yes, that's the name.
Now we're infected with other things, but yeah. So it's been interesting, you know, witnessing that happen, so who knows.
Dunk is the huge hockey guy. He's the Leaf guy forever. And he loves the football. Bucks, that's his name. Go Dunk.
Go Dunk,
he always goes down once a year to see an NFL game. And,
well, I have to have Dunk on for me. Sometimes.
Yeah, you got to have Dunk on. He's way funnier than I am. And, the Leafs are out again, right?
Yeah.
Yes,
they're consistent.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm kind of one of those guys that I think it'd be a great thing to see. I think it'd be great to see the Leafs win a cup.
Here's my other hockey story. I was at the Stanley Cup when the Leafs won with my dad.
Oh, was that like Daryl Sittler days? When was that?
Like 1967 or something, for Christ's sake. You weren't even a twinkle in your parents' thing.
That's true.
Yeah. Who was on the Leafs back then? I'm trying to think.
I think it was Moses, Jesus Christ, I think.
I think all the players are listed in that hip song somewhere, you know.
Yeah.
Bill Barilko, everyone.
Bill Barilko, yeah, for sure.
Eddie Shark.
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
All right.
It's come to this fucking hockey.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's
a Canadian show.
It happens on this show.
You guys are Canadian.
Next week, we're going to have Brian Vollmer. Do you have any questions for him?
Brian.
From
Brian. Linda. Well, every time we talk, like if I call this house and... Linda will be answering. Brian. It's Russ. Who? Brian forgets who I am so many times that I've known him for 40 years. I could be right in his face. I think the first cruise we did, I did it with my solo gag, and we just got on the ship, and we were on the deck there where when everybody gathers, and there's Brian comes out of the pool, and Linda's there, and Linda's like, Brian, look who it is, and he's right in my face. Who are you? And recently I was at a charity gig with him, and it's the same thing. I'm standing with Linda talking to her, and he comes up, and she's like, oh, Brian, look. And he goes, who are you? I had a beard on. I had a big beard, too. And Brian goes, he's right in my face. Who are you? I said, I'm Lemmy. Oh, he said, like, nice to meet you. Hi, it's Ross. Helix, what can you say about those guys? Like, holy fucking veterans.
Yeah, they're veterans for real, yeah.
Absolutely.
I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, we played a couple shows with them in Kickbox in the last 2-3 years. We come out west and do the casinos with those cats, and we all have fun. Oh my God, we have too much fun, actually.
The week after, we're having Victor from Kickbox on, so there you go.
Victor, I love Victor. Yeah. He's one of my best buddies, man. Like, tell him that. Fuck that. Fuck Kickbox.
No, I love Kickbox.
We're prairie folk. We have to love those guys for real.
No, we're huge fans, man.
Yeah, they're great.
We love those cats. Great albums. Like, and they killed. Like, that's when I saw them in Winnipeg.
Yeah.
Back in the olden days. Like, and they would just rip the fucking roof off the place.
I bet.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Killer.
Well, enjoy your beautiful day there in Orillia, Ontario, because I know in a few months you'll be hiding indoors.
About 10 minutes. It's chilly here today.
Is it really?
Yeah.
It's getting a little chilly in Winnipeg. Is that
it depends on what you consider chilly. I mean, Brent probably thinks it's getting a little chilly, but I'm going to enjoy it while we can. So
this is Las Vegas right now.
Oh shit!
112.
Owie.
I haven't been outside in 100 years.
108.
108 in the valley in Los Angeles.
Okay, so we're coming to the valley. I'm bringing all the dwarfs to stay at your places.
There you go. What is it in Simi Valley?
96. There you go.
96.
Oh, man. It's so much cooler down here.
Okay, so you
that's
got
not bad.
Metro.
Yeah, not at all. That should be more
metric, huh? It's 40 below here already.
Oh, God.
Well, it's 40 below. And I don't give a
Fantastic. So much, Russ.
Thanks for having me, guys.
I honestly think we could probably do this for four more hours and still never reach the bottom of the stories. So
yeah. Well, it was a lot of fun, and thanks for having me on. You got to get Dunk on.
Get
me and Dunk on at the same time.
Oh, I can only. What we'll do is we'll have him on to counter all your stories at his point of view.
Yes. Well, yeah. We'll say, yeah, it'll be a huge fight. We'll break up on your show. We usually break up every night when we play, so it's
consistent. Consistent.
Nothing.
Yes, consistency. That has been the theme of this whole show.
Awesome. All right. Well, thanks again, Russ, for coming on, and we will see everybody back here, same time, same place, next Tuesday. Have a good day.